The Old Testament reading for Epiphany 4 is from Micah chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. A couple of observations at the outset. First, Micah's correspondences with Isaiah are pretty clear. Parallel passages, especially like the Holy Mountain of Isaiah 2 in relation to Micah chapter 4. Both prophets proclaim themes of injustice at the top of Israelite or Judahite society, and particularly in the cities. Both talk about the contrast between a people who misunderstand and the prophet who understands because it has been given to him to do so. There are some good associations between Micah and the epistle for this Sunday, 1 Corinthians 1, verses 18 to 31. God's wisdom and strength are exhibited in what the world considers foolish and weak. And that's illustrated at the beginning of chapter 5 in Micah, in English, the call to marshal your troops to try to defend yourself with your own strength. But then 5:2 announces that it is from little Bethlehem that the ruler God chooses will come for the deliverance of his people. Connections also with the gospel, Matthew 5, the Beatitudes. The poor, the weak, the mourning, the hungry for what is right, these are the ones who are blessed. The rest of chapter 5 is a message of warning, of threat. Yahweh says, I will tear down in you what is offensive to me. And so that is the message, the understanding that people are to carry in their minds as our text begins. So, 6 verse 1, Shem'una et Asher Yahweh Omer. Listen to what Yahweh is saying. And notice that it is a participle, is saying. It's not something that he has said or will say. It's something that is to be understood as being kind of in progress, both in the prophet's utterance and in the circumstances that they see around them, which Micah already has described from the beginning of his book. The next line, Kum Reef Eth Harim. Arise, plead a case with the mountains, and the implication is that the people who are here should hear or should be pleading their case. Batish ma na ha givaoth koleka, and let the hills hear your voice. As at the beginning of Isaiah, there is an invocation of heaven and earth to hear Yahweh's case. Here, there's an invitation. The people are welcome to plead their case to the surrounding creation. Verse 2, Shem'u Harim et Riv Yahweh. Listen, O mountains, to the lawsuit or case of Yahweh. The Ha Ethanim Mosadei Aretz. Listening to the lawsuit is not only in the mountains, but also in the perennial things, the Ethanim, and the perennial or the sort of the most permanent things, the fact that it's modified there by the article, Ha Ethanim, suggests that it might be a superlative. So it's the mountains and the most permanent things, the foundations of the earth. So after Yahweh, when you move into the realm of creation, the most permanent things, the things that are sort of aspire toward eternity, perhaps, are the mountains and the foundations of the earth, the things that God has established. Ki riv la Yahweh im amo, because Yahweh has a case against his people. The im Yisrael yith vachach, and with or against Israel, he will argue. And it's a hith pe'el of yachach, which suggests that there might be sort of an almost back and forth or an iterative thing, that he will sort of persist in this case And it's something that's back and forth. Verse 3, Ami, my people, meh asithi laka, what have I done to you? Uma heletika, and what have I wearied you? Or perhaps here, how have I wearied you? In what way? What have I done to make you weary? Anevi, give me an answer. You talk back to me. So the thing is that the argument, that is where the back and forth, the invitation to respond. Verse 4, Ki he'elathika me'eretz Mitzrayim u'mebeth avadim peditika. For I brought you up from the land of Egypt and from a house of slaves or slavery. I ransomed or redeemed you. I'll focus on the Me'eretz Mitzrayim and the Mebeth Avadim. That phrase echoes what is in the preamble to the commandments. Anoki Yahweh Asher Hotzeitika Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mebeth Avadim. I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of a house of slaves. So this is urging the people to think back to the Exodus experience, not the immediate experience of Micah's generation, but it's part of who Israel and Judah are and have been. The remainder of verse 4, Va'eshlach lifaneka et Moshe, Aharon, u'Miriam. Of course, it's always interesting to recognize that Yahweh in Exodus observes the calamity of his people and expresses his determination to come down, but he operates through the instrumentality of these three key figures, Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. So there's always this kind of mediated way in which Yahweh accomplishes the salvation of his people. Verse 5, Ami, return, my people. Zakarna, remember, Ma Ya'atz Balak Melek Moav, remember what Balak, king of Moab, counseled or advised, tried to get done. Ume Ana Oto, Bil'am ben Beor, and remember what Balaam, son of Beor, answered him. Recall in Numbers chapters 22 to 24, it's part of the wandering of the Exodus, and Balak, the king of Moab, keeps telling Balaam to curse the Israelites. Balaam keeps blessing them instead. Finally, Balak says, well, just don't say anything. Don't bless or curse them. And Balaam answers still the third time, I have to do what Yahweh said. So there is this kind of oversight that God superintends even the wandering. He brings them out in the Exodus. He superintends the wandering in the wilderness. And then the final part of verse 5 here, Min hashatim ad ha-Gilgal. So Yahweh's watchfulness over his people extends from Exodus through the wandering and into the crossing from Shittim to Gilgal, crossing the Jordan into the Promised Land, the full salvation history of his people. And all of those things were done, Lema'an da'at tzidkot Yahweh, for the sake of knowing the righteousnesses of Yahweh. Here, tzidkot, the plural feminine, probably oriented more toward the righteous acts than sort of the abstract character of Yahweh. Okay, so Yahweh has done all of that stuff that is in Judah's background. Now, if the people will think about that and remember it, now comes something that might be regarded as kind of an, at least at the outset, an internal reflection. Bama Akadem Yahweh, Ikaf Lelohe Marom. With what shall I come before Yahweh? Kadam, here the PL imperfect, first singular common. We encounter that that three-letter root more, I think, in the adverbial form kedem, presence of, and so forth. Here, with what shall I draw near to Yahweh? Ikaf, and I think this is an extension, the Bama does double duty, with what or in what way shall I bow down before God of on high, the Most High God? And now a series of, again, internal, more internal questions. The next line begins with hey interrogative. Ha kadmenu ba'alot ba'agalim b'nei shana. Shall I come near to him with oloth, burnt offerings, some kind of offerings? Ba'agalim with calves, b'nei shana. The idiom of sons of some kind of number, or here sons of a year, has to do with an idiom for age, so with calves a year old. Verse 7 continues the internal questioning, another hey interrogative. Hayirtse Yahweh ba'alpe elim beriv Vuvot Nachle Shaman. Will Yahweh be pleased with thousands of rams? With myriads of streams or rivers of oil. So is it in the abundance of sacrifices that Yahweh will be pleased? And then one more interrogative. Ha etain bekori pishi Pari bitne chata nafshi. Shall I give my firstborn, and here it's kind of a double accusative, the bikori, my firstborn, pishi, my transgression. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? Pari bitne, fruit of my loin, sin of my soul, my whole being. So the ha'etain governs both. Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my loins for the sin of my soul, my being? And then verse 8, the familiar passage, higid l'cha adam ma tov. He has told you, O man, what is good. Uma Yahweh doresh mimka. And what does Yahweh seek or require from you? Ki im asoth mishpat va'ahavat chesed v'chatzneya lecha leket im elecha elohecha. Ki im, kind of a strong negation, sort of like but rather. You know, what does he require of you? But not the sacrifices in verses 7 and so forth, but rather doing justice and love of chesed, loyalty, devotion, steadfast love, and humbly walking with your God. It's interesting that there are two infinitives construct, the asoth and the hatsneia. In the middle is really a noun in construct, love of, and yet all of them probably can operate, you know, reasonably well as gerunds. Doing right, justice, loving, chesed, devotion, steadfastness, and humbly making oneself in a, you know, sort of a humbling way, walking, that kind of walking with your God. Now, the American mind or mindset seems to entail or a kind of a considerable sense of self-righteousness. And the American spirit, so to say, spurs us to aspire to personal significance or self-importance. The prophet, all of the prophets, resist that mind and spirit when they remind us that our self-righteousness is never good enough and our self-importance is at best impermanent. The humble, the faithful way is God's way, which he exhibits in his firstborn, the only begotten, the one who humbled himself in the service of justice and devotion to mercy, a humble way that would lead to his death. In Epiphany, we follow Jesus and learn his humility, and we learn his trust that his Father, our God, who had led Israel out of Egypt through the wilderness and to the promised land, that Father and our God would bring him to the proper conclusion of the work for which he was sent, and will be faithful to do so also for us. Epiphany is another sort of mini green season, so we watch Jesus as his ministry emerges, but we also get insights into the mission and ministry that he has left for us to do.